Now, under new guidance from the U.S. Treasury Department and the Internal Revenue Service, some tax-exempt groups won't have to give the names and addresses of their major donors to the IRS. In a statement on Monday, Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin said the IRS doesn't need that kind of info to enforce the tax code. Conservatives and congressional Republicans have been calling for this change for some time now. They say the reporting requirement made their donors vulnerable to exposure by the IRS and state regulators. Critics say they're worried about domestic and international contributors who want to get around the law or just keep their identity secret. Lloyd Hitoshi Meyer is a law professor at Notre Dame Law School. Lloyd, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Glad to be here, Rob.
Well, tell us about the category and the kinds of organizations who will be affected by this change.
Sure. So the organizations that are affected are not charities, and they're not political organizations, what sometimes are called 527s. There are other types of tax-exempt nonprofits, social welfare groups like Sierra Club or the NRA or Planned Parenthood, unions, and trade associations such as the Chambers of Commerce.
And what can these kind of groups do in terms of political action?
Well, if they're following the tax laws, they can lobby to an unlimited amount as long as it relates to their core function. For example, in a union's case, aiding its worker members. And they can support or oppose candidates who are running for office as long as that's not their primary activity.
And then sometimes we see organizations like the NRA is one, for example, or Planned Parenthood, I think, where they'll have their organization, this category of 501c4 is the title, I think, and they might have something called our organization action fund or political action something. So some of these organizations might have two separate arms. Do I have that right?
That's right. Actually, some of them have more than two. The NRA is a good example, as is Planned Parenthood. They have a charitable arm, which can receive tax-deductible contributions and can fund public education campaigns, for example. They have a social welfare arm, that's the 501c4 you referenced, that does unlimited amount of lobbying, can do some campaign work. And then they often have so-called 527s, political organizations, that actually all they do is support or oppose candidates.
Now let's zoom back in on the group affected here, the 501c4. What if I was one of those groups before this guideline change, what kind of information did I have to give the IRS about who my donors were?
So you had to fill out a schedule on your annual return that you filed with the IRS. And on that schedule, you had to list the name and address of every donor who had given more than $5,000 or more in that year, as well as the amount they had given, or if it wasn't cash, the property that they had given, like stock, for example. So you had to put all those names, all that definite information on the schedule. It's important to realize, though, the IRS was not allowed to publicly release the names and addresses of the donors. So when they released information, or when the group is required under law to release information, they could redact the identifying information for those donors. It wouldn't be publicly available.
So if it wasn't for public transparency, what was the argument for these kind of disclosures to the IRS?
The argument is that people that give a lot of money to a group have influence over that group. And the concern is twofold. One is that they might use that influence to somehow benefit themselves in a way that's not allowed under the tax laws. You're free, of course, to give gifts to these organizations for them to do whatever they want to do. But if you give the money and let's say the organization steers business to your business, that would be problematic. That's so-called private benefit. The other reason the IRS might want that information is some people might be trying to deduct the contributions to these groups. These are not charities. You can't deduct a gift to them as a charitable contribution. If you go to the NRA or Planned Parenthood's website, you actually see a disclaimer that we're required to put up there by law saying this is not tax deductible as a charitable contribution. Nevertheless, some people, sometimes innocently, make a mistake. They think they can deduct it anyhow. They don't realize the differences. And having this list allows the IRS, let's say, to double check that you aren't deducting a contribution to a group that's not a charity.
Talking to Lloyd Hitoshi Meyer, law professor at the Notre Dame Law School, looking at this change in regulations coming from the Trump administration on what a particular set of nonprofit organizations that can do some political action, but they can't only be political action, how they have to report their donors to the U.S. government, the IRS in particular. Lloyd, people have been upset about this requirement for some time now, Republicans and conservatives in particular. What has been their argument against this requirement?
The argument has been that there's no reason the IRS needs this information. It's not actually using it to enforce the laws or go after the kinds of problems I mentioned earlier. And once this information is put on a form, even though it's not supposed to be released to the public, it can be released to the public by accident or even intentionally. So there have been a few instances where the schedule has become public. Sometimes it's become because of an error on the part of the IRS, sometimes on the part of the group itself. And sometimes maybe someone intentionally released it, whether an insider to the group or perhaps a rogue IRS employee. It's been relatively rare, but it has happened. And once that information is out there, it can be, the argument is, damaging to the donors. You may not want your friends and neighbors and customers or employer to know that you've given to the NRA or Planned Parenthood a significant amount of money. And that's the argument. It would chill people's speech. They'd be less likely to give money to these groups if they knew that giving that money would be public.
And people, mostly critics from the left, I think it's fair to say, are saying, now hold on there. Ending this disclosure requirement could mean more dark money. They say more untraceable money getting into American politics because these are groups that can do at least some political activity. Is there anything to that?
There's something to that. In that even when the names and addresses are redacted as they're supposed to be, you could see the schedule and see, well, look, we have a group here that says it's Americans for a Better America, but in fact there are two donors to it. You could see there are only two donors that are giving all the money. And this would at least allow some light on these groups. You'd be able to see this is not really a group that's supported by a large grassroots movement. This is really a group that's supported by a couple large donors. We don't know who they are. Maybe journalists can find out who they are through other means, but you know, the schedule doesn't tell us. But at least now we know this is not really a grassroots group. This is really supported by a couple large donors. There's also the hope, though I think this is a fainter hope, that the IRS would use the fact that it knew who the donors were to maybe look into things a little bit more and find out whether there was something under at least the tax laws improperly going on. But it is a false hope to think, and I've heard this already in some of the news coverage here, that the IRS was going to make its business to figure out, well, is there a campaign finance violation here? Are these foreigners giving money to these groups? That's not the IRS's jurisdiction. It wasn't going to be looking into that under any conditions, and it probably couldn't share that information with people that could look into it, because it's not allowed to share a lot of taxpayer information even with other agencies.
Right. That potential foreign donor issue is one that's come up, as you say, in the news today. Who is responsible for making sure, hey, this politically active group isn't taking donations it is supposed to take?
When it's in federal elections, that's the Federal Election Commission. If it's involving state candidates, that would involve the state counterparts, the Federal Election Commission, which every state has. The problem, as your listeners are probably well aware, is that the Federal Election Commission is divided on partisan lines. And that division has meant deadlock in most situations. So even when there seems to be a case that there might have been foreign money trying to influence U.S. elections illegally, the FEC has not approved moving ahead in most investigations because the commissioners are split by party, and the conservative commissioners require a pretty high bar before they're okay an investigation.
Now, if I'm one of these 501c4s and I'm doing political stuff, supporting a candidate, lobbying Congress, say, for an issue, do I file a report with the FEC, the Federal Elections Commission?
If you do certain kinds of advertising to get a candidate elected, a federal candidate elected, then you may have to file a report with the FEC saying we're spending money on these kinds of communications, only certain kinds. But usually you don't have to report the identity of who gave you money when you file that report. That's because the FEC has ruled, and this is controversial, that if you have donors that give you money, but they don't earmark it for particular kinds of ads that are regulated in a federal election law, you don't have to reveal the names and addresses of those donors. So they can remain anonymous. This is the so-called dark money. If you're lobbying, you may have to file lobbying reports, and that's filed in different places, usually with Congress itself. But there you don't have to reveal your donors either. You have to reveal basically what you're lobbying about, if you're working on behalf of any other group, and in general who you're talking to. But you don't have to say where the money's coming from.
Talking to Lloyd Hitoshi Meyer. He's a law professor at Notre Dame Law School, and we're looking at the Trump administration's decision to stop requiring groups like a variety of groups, labor unions, various sorts of political groups in this 501c4 category to disclose their major donors to the IRS. Treasury officials say the change will protect privacy and reduce compliance costs for nonprofit organizations. Critics say could lead to more dark money in American politics. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think about this change? What's your reaction to it? Do you think it's a good move? The IRS should stick to enforcing tax laws, not to track the donors here? Or do we need it to have this information? And do you have a question about how all this stuff works? Lloyd might be able to answer it for you. You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can email ideas@WPR.org or tweet us at Central Time WPR. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our discussion on the Trump administration's decision to end a requirement that certain nonprofits disclose their major donors to the IRS. That includes groups like the National Rifle Association, AARP, Americans for Prosperity, a whole bunch of others. Lloyd Hitoshi Meyer is a law professor at Notre Dame Law School, and you can join in with your reactions and your questions at 800-642-1234. Is this good or bad news as you see it? How much do you care about who is funding a particular organization like these? The information wasn't publicly accessible or wasn't supposed to be, as we heard earlier in the conversation. Are you worried overall about laws on political donations? Who can make them? How much has to be disclosed? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll go to your calls now. Gail is with us in Fish Creek. Gail, hi.
Hi. I have a question. Since we're constantly in battle to keep separation of church and state, how does the churches, which are supposedly like a nonprofit organization, in themselves, how does this new stipulation here with not having, having a disconnect of knowing who's contributing, how will we know whether a religious organization is contributing to a political nonprofit for political gain and influence using that back door as a way to do it? Because that has, we're watching this happen with libertarians coming in and infiltrating the Republican Party.
I'll jump in, Gail. Lloyd, so there's a lot there, but in this category of 501c4s, that's the group affected by this change, are there faith organizations, religious organizations that have created organizations in that category?
It's relatively rare. A few have. For example, Focus on the Family has a 501c4 arm, if I remember correctly. It's certainly true, as your listener pointed out, that without this reporting, the IRS can't simply look at the schedule and say, whoa, you got a contribution from a charity. Charities can't do that unless they're really careful that the money is only spent on good charitable stuff. But see, that's actually one of the issues, that a C3, a charity, can give money to one of these social welfare groups. It just has to put restrictions on how the social welfare group uses that money. So it's actually not uncommon for the NRA's charitable arm or the Planned Parenthood's charitable arm to give money to the social welfare arm as long as it's only used for good charitable purposes. So it might be a yellow flag if a church's name showed up on one of these donor schedules before, but it wouldn't necessarily be automatically illegal. And so the IRS might look into it because of that. But to be fair, there's not really any indication they were using the information for those purposes previously.
Lloyd, we've been talking about the money coming into these organizations. If I'm running a 501c4, this particular kind of organization, do I have to disclose to someone, the IRS or someone, how I'm spending the money?
You do. All these 501c4s and the unions and the trade associations, they all have to file annual returns to the IRS that includes lots of information about how they're spending the money, including if they're making grants to other groups, making gifts to them, and who they're paying compensation to and who their largest vendors are that they have contracts with. So that information is reported. Now, there's a real time lag in the reporting because you don't have to file the return after the year is over. You have 4.5 months to file a return, and you can get an automatic 6-month extension. So one of the complaints people have had is groups like Americans for Prosperity, you don't know what they spend money on till, you know, almost a year potentially after when they spent it. And for, you know, in terms of political time, of course, that's forever.
Let's go back to our callers now. Mike is on the line in Milwaukee. Mike, hi.
Hey, hello. You know, this hypocrisy on the right, it amazes me. We have a Republican governor who made it all these signatures on recall election petitions to be made public, and then the Republican Party has volunteers come in and locate all the names on the petitions so that those people can then be harassed. Their employers can then know what their political situation is. I don't see. I feel if I sign a petition against for the recall of the governor, I don't know why I should be open for harassment like that. And that kind of logic, I know this isn't within the IRS's jurisdiction, but it's the same. It's basically the same argument, and I think it falls flat on its face because my position is that so much money from the right is gotten from people that are so advantaged financially that they can beat us over the head with their money.
Mike, thanks for the call. Lloyd, going beyond 501c4s here, has there been a trend in political donations to less disclosure, less public access to who's making donations?
There has been a trend in that direction, and I think setting aside the tax policy issues, it's a bad trend. I think that the major financial supporters of political causes, and particularly of candidates, should have their names publicly available. Now, the listener is right that one concern is, you know, for most people, their name is not going to tell you anything about the candidate because you don't know anything about them, and most it becomes a way of going after that person, retaliate against them. So I don't think we should be just forcing the disclosure of relatively small financial donors or people that sign these petitions because they are the people that could be losing their jobs or having other issues really arise that prevent them from being politically engaged. But for large donors who are insulated by their wealth from consequences and who are most likely to have influence because they're giving a lot of money that matters for causes and candidates, I think they should be disclosed, and I think that's something that should be done under the election law system, both at the federal level and at the state level. I want to know who's putting the money in the system. And one of the ironic things here is Republicans used to say disclosure was the best way to deal with this. Let's get rid of limits, but let's make sure everything's disclosed, and that'll solve things. But now that the limits are going away, some Republicans, at least, are pushing for no disclosure based on these harassment concerns, which is ironic, especially since actually in one of these cases that came forward, Justice Scalia was the one in our argument who said people should have the courage of their convictions and shouldn't be afraid of disclosure.
Mike, thanks for your call. We'll go next to Daryl in Baraboo. Daryl, hi.
Hi. I just find it interesting that you have the Republicans that want to make money, dollars, money of speech, but then they don't want anyone to know who's saying what. They want to hide. The Supreme Court and Citizens United, when they passed it, they said they assumed that the Congress would pass laws that made who donated money available, and when the Democrats tried to do it, they were filibustered and stopped by the Republicans. This is This is just another scam of disenfranchising everyone else except the rich elite.
Daryl, thanks for the call. Lloyd, you mentioned Citizens United. People opposed to that decision were worried it was going to change our political landscape. As we wrap up, has it?
It has. It's given a green light for people to spend unlimited amounts on politics, whether directly or through these groups. And that's created this dark money problem that people can pool money. And because there haven't been disclosure laws, as your listener pointed out, often without having that information disclosed about who's giving the money. And that can make a big difference, particularly in targeted races. I want to know who's trying to sell me something, is what it boils down to, or sell me a candidate. And we can know that in many situations now.
We'll leave it there for now. Lloyd, thanks a lot for joining us today.
You're welcome.
Lloyd Hitoshi Meyer is a law professor at Notre Dame Law School. We talked with him about changes in IRS policy. This is from the Trump Treasury Department that says certain political nonprofit groups will no longer have to tell the IRS who their major donors are. This is information that hadn't been previously available to the public or wasn't supposed to be. It just went to the IRS, then was redacted in public reports. Keep sharing your thoughts. Tweet us at Central Time WPR.